So I come from a family of planners and organizers. And I was reminded of my family's tendency towards order when I lived with my parents in Asheville, North Carolina, from September 2012 to January 2013. This was between my time serving as a Peace Corps volunteer in Malawi, which is a small country in southeastern Africa, and moving to Berkeley, California with my dog to start the Master of Divinity program at the Unitarian Universalist Seminary, Star King School for the Ministry. In those few months of living at home for the first time since I was a teenager, I was without a fixed identity. I was in between being my parents' child and an adult in my own right, adjusting to American life after 2 years in an African village, and working at Starbucks while planning for seminary. Both my parents have careers that form a strong core of their identities. My father is a UU minister, and my mother is a hospice nurse. One of my most vivid memories when I was living at home during those few months was my mother arriving back from her house calls and immediately opening her laptop to do her charting. With glee in her eyes and a jaunty flick of her computer stylus, I could see the satisfaction that she got of putting all her patients' data into its place. Perhaps an empowering feeling of giving some semblance of structure to people's lives as their death draws near. A time just as messy and mysterious as the beginning. The hour of our birth and the hour of our death can only be approximated. And sometimes that approximation is way off. Also, exactly how both events unfold is unknown. And my father, and his work as a UU parish minister, plays a crucial role in people's life events as well, from child dedications to memorial services. I've seen, especially in the time when I lived with my parents, that serving as a stabilizing presence in transitional phases of life, bearing witness to the joy, the mourning, the whole spectrum of human emotions in response to what gives our life meaning, is deeply gratifying to my father. And while he might not share my mother's love of categorization, I can see that he takes comfort in being the category minister. Similarly, perhaps, to how he takes comfort in being the category father, recognizing his limitations and putting them aside when his wisdom and guidance are needed. So while I was glad to see my parents happy with their chosen place in the world, it was also a bit disconcerting for all of us to be a household of two parents and their nearly 30-year-old child. And after the end of our fourth month living together, I think we were all ready for me and my dog to move on. We moved to the dorms at the Pacific School of Religion in Berkeley, where I live today. So in my dorm, if you look to your left, as soon as you walk through the front doorway, you would spot a large calendar with a poster for the month of November. It's tacked to a bulletin board. A second glance would quickly show you that on the square of each day, there's written the name of a holiday. I don't know if you're aware, but at least according to several internet websites, every day of the year is a holiday. Today, for example, is Chaos Never Dies Day. At first glance, this phrase seemed to me like a slumped-shoulder defeatist response to a hectic life. Chaos never dies, which requires constant effort to attain some semblance of order and regularity. But if I looked at it another way, chaos never dies! Sounds more like an anarchist response to the conformity of the status quo. In the first interpretation, chaos is a hostile force, a monkey wrench thrown in the machine of progress. And in the second, chaos is a revolutionary spirit that resists uniformity. The German philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche, famous for declaring, "God is dead," may have been again channeling the spirit of revolution when he said, "You must have chaos within you to give birth to a dancing star." For Nietzsche, modern science and increasing secularization of European society had effectively killed the Abrahamic God who had served as a basis for meaning and value in the West for over 1,000 years. In a God-free world, humans must use their own chaotic creative powers to give birth to the beautiful, the wondrous, the good, and the alive. Chaos has long been part of birth-giving narratives. Many creation stories from around the world begin with chaos as a dark, deep water, or as space, a formless void, the existential nothingness, which is raw material used by a divine being who forms and orders the world. The word chaos, it comes from a Greek creation story. It's a Greek word. In Greek, chaos means yawning or gap. And in Greek mythology, it's described as the first thing that existed before Gaia, the primeval goddess, gave birth to the earth and the universe. The Bible has a similar creation story in Genesis 1, where God creates the earth out of a formless void. The Oxford Annotated Bible notes that in Genesis, the word, the void, is a translation of the Hebrew tihom, meaning the deep. And some biblical scholars understand the term tihom to refer to the goddess Tiamat in Babylonian creation myth. Tiamat was the goddess representing primordial oceanic chaos, who was defeated by the head orderly god, Marduk, who then created the world. And then there's our scientific creation story, which you heard some of this morning, that our universe began with chaos 14 billion years ago, when all the matter of the universe flared forth in a single point to a big bang, expanding out into space. So there's many ways of looking at the void or chaos in these creation stories. Chaos could represent the raw energy necessary for any life to come into being. Or chaos could represent something unknowable and frightening, something we must ignore or run from or have dominion over. One frightening image of chaos is extreme weather events, like hurricanes or tornadoes. Extreme weather is not only out of our control, but also is notoriously difficult to predict, in the long term at least. And mathematician Edward Lorenz confirmed weather's unpredictability in 1961 in his work using a digital computer to simulate weather conditions. Through these experiments, Lorenz found that in certain highly sensitive environments, minuscule changes in initial conditions like pressure, temperature, humidity could produce a chain of events that produced dramatically different results depending on what went on in the initial conditions. And this is to such a degree that the flap of a butterfly's wings in Brazil could set off a tornado in Texas. Lorenz's findings came to be known as the chaos theory's the butterfly effect. It's a major component of chaos theory, the study of complex and turbulent systems like the weather, like swarms of animals, like rushing rivers, even like the stock market and traffic patterns. So to claim that a butterfly's wing can cause a storm, it seems so illogical. And it raises the question, how can we definitely say what causes any storm if it could be something as slight as a butterfly? Nature defies the expectation that we can track down events to their first causes. Instead, we can only roughly approximate them. It is probability, not certain cause and effect, that now dictates how scientists understand many systems, from subatomic particles to storms. So exploration into subatomic particles, or matters that are smaller than an atom, are made, what they're made of and what they behave like is sometimes termed the new science of the 20th century, such as quantum physics and Einstein's theory of relativity. This science is new because it brings further complexity to the scientific method that's been used for hundreds of years, Newtonian physics and Cartesian biology. Both Isaac Newton and René Descartes helped to explain the workings of the natural world. Descartes by breaking down matter into its composite parts of molecules and atoms, and Newton by coming up with universal laws for motion and objects. Together, these scientists created a system where the living world was reducible, explainable, predictable, and mechanical. So the new science searched for more intricacy in this system by looking deeper, down past the atom to the subatomic level. And what physicists found is that the deeper they looked, the harder it was to pinpoint any matter at all. An electron, for example, is only empty space with probability patterns of energetic interconnections. The new science finds that interconnection is the basis of all life, which is not mechanical and rote, but instead constantly responds and changes based on its environment, organizing itself at multiple levels. Deep ecologist Joanna Macy explains how every living system, from atoms up to galaxies, are called holons. What that means is that every system is both a whole in its own right, comprised of subsystems, like an atom is comprised of electrons and protons and neutrons, and also part of a larger system, like an atom is part of a molecule. So too, each of us is a unique individual with inherent worth and dignity, and is also part of an interdependent web. As individuals, our small actions can expand out and have exponential effects. So how do we behave in a chaotic world when there is so much that we cannot predict or personally control? Friedrich Nietzsche believed the answer was in what he called life affirmation, using each of our creative powers of discernment to question all doctrines that drain life's expansive energies. So we have seen the draining of life's expansive energies in the doctrine of domination of nature and the industrial growth society, which has brought extinction to hundreds of species of animals and has brought climate change. So how do we use our creative powers to respond to the dangers that we've posed to the natural world? Joanna Macy, deep ecologist, writes that in system theory, responding to danger is a function of feedback, the information circuit that connects people's perception to their action. And appropriate response to danger requires that feedback loop. This can help us to discern when to stay the course and when to change when needed. New understandings of change and disorder have emerged from chaos theory. Work in this field has led to a new appreciation of the relationship between order and chaos. These two forces are now understood as mirror images, two states that contain the other. A system can descend into chaos and unpredictability, yet within that state of chaos, the system is held within boundaries that are well-ordained and predictable. Without the partnering of these two great forces, order and chaos, no progress is possible. chaos is necessary to new creative ordering. This revelation has been known throughout time, and we can see it in our creation stories. We just needed science to remind us of it. Life, it's a dance of chaos and order, of change and stability. So one representation of that is on my shirt today. It's called the Dancing Shiva. It's a Hindu god who dances to destroy weary worldviews, weary perspectives, and weary lifestyles, and dances to create the world anew. In 2004, a statue of the Dancing Shiva was unveiled at CERN, the European Center for Research in Particle Physics in Geneva. The statue was given to CERN by the Indian government to celebrate the researchers' center's long association with India. And there was a special plaque placed next to the statue of Shiva that explains the significance of the metaphor of Shiva's cosmic dance. Hundreds of years ago, Indian artists create visual images of dancing Shivas in a beautiful series of bronzes. In our time, physicists have used the most advanced technology to portray the patterns of this cosmic dance. The metaphor of the cosmic dance that unifies ancient mythology, religious art, and modern physics. We all come from a human family of planners who do the necessary work of comprehending and ordering the world. But we also come from the womb of the stars. Its fiery furnaces pulse through our veins, reminding us to be open to fragments of holiness, glimpses of eternity, and brief moments of insight. And renewed by their grace, move boldly into the unknown.